case number 21-1112, Instituto Mexicano del Seguro Social versus Stryker Corporation. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mark Manny for the appellant. You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Mark Manny, and I represent the Instituto Mexicano de Seguro Social, which Mexicans conveniently call IMS. IMS lawsuit was dismissed for forum non-convenience. Based entirely on the lower court's view of the nature of IMS case and of the lower court's view of Mexico's and U.S. interests in Mexico's in this case. We recognize that that decision is reversible only if the court made a clearly erroneous error of fact or an error of law. We believe, however, that there are a number of both. I'm going to address some of those errors today, starting with what I think is the clearest, the court's complete misreading of Mexico's policy interests. Lower court held, without any briefing, any hearing or discussion.
Counsel, do you agree then that forum nonconvenience can be applied consistently with the treaty?
With the convention?
Yes.
Yes, in some cases I believe it could, certainly not in this case. If it could be shown, for example, that a foreign sovereign sued someone in a grossly inconvenient form to vex and harass them in a classic forum nonconvenience case, then yes, I think that in the interest of justice, that could be dismissed. We're not claiming that the convention forecloses forum nonconvenience, but that it has to be considered as all treaty obligations have to be considered, such as treaties of friendship that say these citizens are to be treated like U.S. citizens.
So we're reviewing the district court's decision for abuse of discretion?
Well, because I think they made an error of law. The forum nonconvenience doctrine requires them to view treaty obligations, also requires the court to address the U.S. policy interests. The court got both of those wrong. They did not mention the convention, did not apply its provisions. That's an error of law, failure to apply the treaty obligations. It's
so,
also...
Could you state in some succinct fashion how the treaty altered pre-existing U.S. law when the declaration of ratification says current U.S. law fulfills the obligations of the convention for the United States? And it seems to me that you're in some way saying that it in fact altered our forum nonconvenience law.
It did not alter our forum nonconvenience law. What it did is it set the policy of the United States, the foreign policy of the United States.
But that doesn't answer the question. Why then, go back to your first point, why does the district court have to consider it if it doesn't alter the law?
Your Honor, it does alter the law. It doesn't alter the law of forum nonconvenience.
But that's what the district court dismissed for. So how does that affect forum nonconvenience?
Because the court failed to recognize a new foreign policy of the United States, which is a declaration that foreign sovereigns
which
like
him. Which three factors does that affect under forum nonconvenience?
In the public interest factors, the court's to assess the interest of the foreign sovereign in deciding the case in its home courts and the interest of the United States in having the case heard. The United States government, the executive branch in 2005, stated unequivocally that our new foreign policy is that foreign sovereigns have access to U.S. court to bring claims just like this one.
Well, they've always had access in the sense that they can file it, and the only way you get rid of it or change it is by the law of forum nonconvenience, which is pre-existing. I mean, they didn't say here that we're dismissing this case because we don't like foreign countries or that they don't have a right to bring it. They simply applied the pre-existing forum nonconvenience law.
But without reference to the stated policy of the executive branch.
And since the stated policy was to allow more cases than we would have allowed previously, that sounds like altering existing law.
It does. To the extent that it's a new policy, it does. It does not alter the law of forum nonconvenience, but it certainly...
Well, it says current U.S. law fulfills the obligations of the convention, and if you're saying that they should have kept this case when they would not have kept it before the convention, aren't you saying that the U.S. wouldn't have been fulfilling its obligations if it didn't have this changed law?
I will say that the U.S. is currently in violation of the U.N. Convention because of this case, because the U.S., the executive branch, expressly represented to the United Nations that its courts would be bound by and would follow the convention.
But all that the convention requires, correct me if I'm wrong, is that they make our courts available, which they are. It doesn't affect, I mean, we all agree, the three of us and you, I think, all agree it doesn't affect forum nonconvenience law. So I don't understand. Our courts are available. The court went through the factors. She recognized the courts were available, and she made this determination. I'm still failing to see the error of law that she made. Tell me exactly what the error of law is.
She failed to address the convention at all.
Does she have to? What case says she must address the convention under forum nonconvenience?
I cite three in my brief that say that the courts are required to address treaty obligations in addressing forum nonconvenience.
But in forum nonconvenience, how does I'm just failing to see how that impacts the analysis here.
Okay. The court essentially ruled that the U.S. has no interest in this lawsuit, the U.S. government. The executive branch has stated the exact contrary. They have said to the world and to the United Nations...
No, they've said we make our courts available. They made our courts available. Our courts have always been available.
The convention does a lot more than just say file a lawsuit that gets dismissed for convenience. It says they have the right to file a lawsuit and seek compensation and have their day in court. IMS has not gotten
and under forum nonconvenience, you can seek compensation and have your day in court. She just made the determination that because foreign plaintiffs don't have a strong interest, because the other factors counsel against her keeping it, that it should be in Mexico. There's two Mexican law claims, two are mixed. There's plenty, all the witnesses, most of the witnesses are in Mexico. The people who are bribed are in Mexico.
I couldn't disagree more, Your Honor.
Okay.
None of the witnesses that are relevant to this case or in Mexico.
I thought Stryker bribed the people in Mexico, allegedly.
Yes, but this case is not about the fact that their bagmen served bribes in Mexico. This case is about whether Stryker, the Michigan Corporation, is responsible for its bagmen. Stryker doesn't care if its bagmen are, excuse the expression, had left holding the bag.
So
they want to avoid
how are you going to prove it? Explain to me how you prove that they actually bribed someone.
By getting the evidence of the eight other countries that they had the exact same program, including the United States, and showing that their executives managed it. And we get that in Michigan. We don't get that in Mexico, which is why Stryker wants to go to Mexico. And why Mexico...
I'm sorry, I thought they had consented to a jurisdiction to provide those witnesses.
No, they consented to jurisdiction. They didn't promise to bring their executives to Mexico. None of their executives will ever face testimony in Mexico and be forced to decide whether they need to plead the Fifth Amendment or not. None of the evidence of the other eight countries they did the exact same thing in will be in Mexico. So they can argue, our agents went rogue, we didn't know, we're not responsible. They'll hide behind their bagmen, which is what bribers do. That's why they hire bagmen. The court also erred, I believe as a matter of law, in Mexico's policy interest. The court ruled... without any evidence, that Mexico had a strong interest in having this case dismissed and sent to Mexico. In the words of Mexico, because I can't say it better, from the amicus brief, the district court's ultimate conclusion is contradictory. The court dismisses a lawsuit brought by the Mexican government for the stated reason that the dismissal of Mexico's lawsuit best serves the interests of the Mexican government. IMS, an agency of Mexico, brought suit here. And the reason they did it is because experience shows bribers hide behind their bagmen. The only effective way to stop bribery is to get the decision makers, the people in Kalamazoo who orchestrated all this.
Counsel, let me ask you about another suit that your client appears to have brought in the Seventh Circuit against
Zimmer
Biomet. Are you familiar with that suit?
I argued that in the Seventh Circuit a month ago.
As far as the issues go, I mean, what's the difference between that suit and here other than the fact that you have a different defendant? Isn't it the same issues involving forum nonconvenience?
For all practical purposes, it is the same, Your Honor.
Should we not wait until they've decided in the Seventh Circuit before we issue our ruling?
This case is actually newer than the Seventh Circuit, but I don't know if there's a procedure. I would leave that up to the court as how they wanted to manage it. But this appeal was filed before the Seventh Circuit, although the Seventh Circuit was argued before this.
Are there any other lawsuits that your client has brought against defendants in the U.S. that relate to alleged bribery in Mexico?
There are three others pending, one that is settled.
And where are they? Where are they pending?
Two in Miami, federal court in Miami, and one that's being moved from federal court to state court in Massachusetts because we sued a foreign defendant as well.
Who was sued in Miami?
Teva, the largest maker of generic drugs in the world, and Olympus, the camera company for endoscopes and the like.
And who was sued in Massachusetts?
Fresenius, the largest maker of dialysis equipment.
And are all those suits involving the same issue of form nonconvenience?
No. I mean, only these two suits have the form nonconvenience, the Stryker and the Zimmer Biomet. Have that been raised?
Okay. Thank you.
So in that sense, there's these individual suits, the forum nonconvenience issues would rise or fall individually depending on the evidence that was put before the judge there.
If we lose this appeal, Your Honor, I think they're all going to fall on the exact same reason, because I think the district court's opinion, since it wasn't based on any evidence of burden, like, would apply to every case brought into the convention, and they'd all be dismissed.
Well, not every district judge might have the same weighing as Judge Neff did here. Well, it is a weighing of factors and an abuse of discretion. Some other judge might be better taken by your argument. Well, depending on how we would decide it, but I don't see any way that we would be making law that says that an American court can't hear these cases.
I think the law is made in the fact that there's no evidence of any burden whatsoever. IMS has described exactly why they're filing suit. In fact, IMS had to file suit. It's undisputed that we could not get jurisdiction over Stryker in Mexico at the time we filed suit. And the Shue case out of D.C. District Court, a court of appeals, says very clearly that that gives us complete deference, because deference isn't provided to foreign plaintiffs at a lower level as a matter of rule. There's just no presumption that their decision was correct. M's decision to file suit here is fully supported and was fact necessary, and therefore the court erred as a matter of law in saying little deference, which is exactly what the court ruled. He gave
counsel, your time is up. If you want, you can use your rebuttal time now.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Morning, Your Honors. I'm Andy Portinga here on behalf of Stryker Corporation. Eames's argument regarding the impact of the convention on the doctrine of forum nonconvenience has evolved and changed over time. I heard today, Eames state that there is no impact of the convention on the doctrine. Heading number one of their appellate brief is that the convention forecloses the doctrine of forum nonconvenience, and that heading is repeated in the reply brief.
Can I ask a different question, which is, why doesn't the convention affect the first factor? So you've got two types of foreign plaintiffs. You've got foreign governments, and you've got just normal foreign plaintiffs, non-government actors. Why, in the preference of forum, doesn't it impact? I know they're not making this argument, but I'm just curious. A plaintiff has a preference. We usually give a lot of deference to that, but when they're foreign actors, we don't.
Right.
Why doesn't the convention alter that when it's a foreign government act?
Because the convention very clearly has no impact at all on domestic law. And that's for three reasons. First of all, it's a non-self-executing treaty.
I understand it doesn't affect the law per se, but why doesn't it affect the way we pay attention to that factor? Does that make sense? In other words, the law is forum nonconvenience, and there's a factor one, what's the plaintiff's interest in the forum? Why doesn't it affect the interest? I don't know whether that's a law question, a fact question, or a mixed question, but just tell me.
But the law, Your Honor, is that when you have a foreign plaintiff, you don't give deference. Even when you have a U.S. plaintiff living abroad, such as in the Heffron case, you had a U.S. citizen living in Germany, even in that scenario, you don't provide deference. That's the law. That's not a...
I thought it's that we provide little deference. Maybe I missed it.
Well, I think there is some case law that says there's a sliding scale. you know.
Okay, so if it's a sliding scale, then why doesn't it move over when the convention's implied?
Well, there's no law at all. There's no case law that says that just because a foreign entity, a foreign government, wants to bring a lawsuit in the United States, that a district court judge in the United States has to give deference to the decision of a foreign litigant. That's not the law. There's no case law that says that. Yeah, ultimately, Your Honor, I think we can sort of sweep aside the noise of the convention because it has no bearing at all on this case. And we really are left with your standard form nonconvenience analysis, which is a discretionary decision for the district court.
What if the key witness is your CEO and what they're saying, or whoever, one of your corporate entity officers, and they're saying we can't get them in Mexico because they won't come?
Well, regardless of which form it's in, there will be transborder issues, right? The question is, where's the gravamen of this case?
No, they say we don't care about anyone in Mexico.
But the problem is that the EAMS officials that were allegedly bribed are there. We can't subpoena them. We can't compel them to come to Grand Rapids or Kalamazoo to testify. The law firm that was allegedly involved is in Mexico City. We can't subpoena those lawyers and compel them to come to Grand Rapids or Kalamazoo. And the same for the distributor, the former employees of Stryker Mexico that allegedly were involved. The gravamen of this case, when you look at the complaint, there's one paragraph that says this is all orchestrated out of Kalamazoo. Everything else in paragraph 18 to paragraph 40 in the factual section of the complaint talks about what happened in Mexico. The allegation is that Stryker Mexico used a Mexican law firm to make illegal payments to Mexican officials in Mexico, giving rise to causes of action under Mexican law. And so ultimately, the district court was faced with the prospect of, do I really want to try a case involving documents that are going to be translated from Spanish? Most of the witnesses are going to need translators. Involving Mexican law, all of these claims arise under Mexican law. Two of the four, are only under Mexican law. And then there's two tort claims, which are under Michigan's choice of law.
So if it were to be tried in Michigan, would these claims be based on Mexican law?
All of them. And that's what the district court found. And because one of the factors in forum nonconvenience is what law applies, right? You have four counts here. Counts 3 and 4 are only under Mexican law per the complaint. Counts 1 and 2 are inducement of breach of fiduciary duty and alleged fraud, which they say are brought under both. But the district court said, under Michigan's choice of law rules, I'm going to apply Mexican law. So all four counts are going to be solely governed by Mexican law. And under that scenario, it's understandable, it's certainly no abuse of discretion for a judge enough to say, yeah, maybe I'm not the best judge to try this case involving Mexican witnesses and Mexican law and Mexican damages.
Okay, they make the point that, correct me if I'm wrong, that you've consented to jurisdiction, sure, but not necessarily consented to bringing the executives, for example, to testify.
We did consent to jurisdiction for the corporation, true. The affidavit, I do not believe, says anything about consent for the individual witnesses.
But the executives are not defendants.
They're not.
Is that correct?
And I don't represent them individually.
Okay, but at least on its face, there's no reason the Mexican courts can't render a judgment against Stryker that Stryker has consented to jurisdiction based on the evidence that they present in Mexico.
I agree with that. If the panel has any more questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. Otherwise,
they raised the point that the district judge did not address the convention at all. Was that raised below in the filings? Did you respond below if it was raised as to the effect of the convention?
So, Judge Boggs, in the district court, Eames spent two paragraphs talking about the convention, okay? On appeal, it's 12 pages in the first brief and 15 pages in the second brief. The argument has evolved. In the opinion, the district court did talk about the impact of treaties on the forum nonconvenience, and there's a sentence or two. It's not a focus of the opinion, but it wasn't the focus of Eames' argument below. So it's a little, I'd say, a little bit disingenuous for Eames to be criticizing the district court for not more fully addressing an argument that, frankly, was barely preserved below.
Okay, so that the court's statement is plaintiff's reliance on the treaties or comity. On page 6, is that what your reference is?
Correct. Okay. Correct, Your Honor.
Is there anything in the record involving the relative abilities of a Mexican court versus an American, the court where it's been brought in America, with regard to discovery or obtaining of evidence? I mean, I know we've heard general discussions, but was there anything specifically that was brought out where a Mexican court would not be able to do something procedurally that you could obtain in an American court?
So we submitted two affidavits in support of our motion. One was the affidavit of the former Chief Justice of the Mexican Supreme Court. The other affidavit was a professor of law from the University of Pennsylvania and an expert in Mexican law. And they detailed the difficulties that the court would face in trying the case in Michigan, in particular, the lack of subpoena power, the requirement of going through the Hague Convention in terms of getting documents for the Hague Convention, the amount of time that it would take to go through the Hague Convention. So we satisfied our burden of proof on those factors, Your Honor.
Well, presumably you have to go through the Hague Convention in either country, correct?
I think that's right. I agree.
So there's going to be a hurdles in either country to get evidence from the other country. You would
agree? I agree with that. There are inconveniences or hurdles, trans-border, cross-national problems, no matter what happens. But, you know, the question before the court is, did Judge Neff abuse her discretion in determining that the more convenient form for a claim under Mexican law involving Mexican witnesses is in Mexico?
Okay.
Anything further?
Thank you,
counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, let me begin with a couple clarifications. We argued, yes, it was not extensively briefed, the convention, because the convention's clear. It says U.S. policy interest is to allow these cases in court. It had its own heading. It had its own subsection. It was one of the very first points. It was far from barely reserved. It was fully reserved. And again, if we'd had a chance to explain it, we could have. The second part is he just misstates the record when he says, our brief's heading says that the UN Convention forecloses forum nonconvenience. He neglects the last three words of that heading, which is in this matter. We make it very clear in our brief that we are not arguing that the UN Convention forecloses this matter, but that the UN sets out the US policy, and since the time of Chief Justice John Marshall, US courts have deferred to the executive branch in terms exactly of whether to accept jurisdiction in cases involving foreign sovereigns. Before the FSIA, you had Tate letters in every such case. The U.S. executive branch has asked this court, or asked the courts of the U.S., to hear these cases, and the lower court should have at least addressed that issue. The lower court...
Did you make any kind of an argument, back to the last question I was asking your opposing counsel, was there anything presented to the district court as to how procedure or anything else about the Mexican courts would be inferior to what's provided in the American courts?
It's extensive, and it's extensively briefed and effectively ignored, frankly, by Stryker.
What exactly are you saying is inferior in the Mexican court vis-a-vis the American court?
I think the main error of the lower court is it confused location of evidence to access to evidence.
Okay, so you're not saying there's anything about the court system per se in Mexico that's inferior to the American court system.
You're saying
it's because there's evidence in America that can be accessed by an American court that you couldn't get from a Mexican court simply by virtue of it being in a different country.
Well, and also its procedures. There's no discovery in Mexican courts.
No discovery at all?
No. No, you have to bring your documents with you. If you want to call a witness, you have to name the witness. So if we don't know what executives at Stryker did it, we couldn't even ask them to be brought.
Can you do a a witness by videotape or, Zoom.
It's specifically ordered, but you have to identify the witness.
You don't get a deposition, in other words. You have to do your testimony once in court, basically.
In court, yes.
Okay.
It's a civil law system. The judge is the juror. The judge decides what witnesses he wants to hear or she wants to hear. The parties can say, we think you should see these, but it's entirely up to the judge. And so, look, the bottom line is Stryker doesn't want to go to Mexico because there'll be a lot more evidence of its wrong conduct. It wants to go to Mexico because there'll be a lot less. So the court said the evidence is in Mexico, but the Gulf Oil standard says what court can...
What about the point that all the claims are brought under Mexican law? Do you agree with that?
The fraud claim, which is the central claim, and the other cases post this, but that's the only claim we're bringing. The law is the same under Mexico and the U.S. In fact, Mexican law is better. So, yes, I agree that it's going to be under Mexican law. But Mexico's fraud statute is...
So every claim is under Mexican law, you agree?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's where the conduct did. Now, Stryker's responsibility, I believe, is also under Mexican law, but I don't know the answer to that question.
Although if your theory that this is all done from headquarters, why wouldn't you have pled a fraud claim under American law?
We pled it under both, but I just think we're going to lose that choice of law question.
Choice of law
But frankly, they haven't said, and I don't see any difference between Mexican fraud law and U.S. fraud law, except that Mexican fraud law is broader because it doesn't have the reliance element. In other words, you don't have to intend that person to do it, so it would be easier to get Stryker under Mexican law than U.S. law. So I don't think we'd be fighting it. But I think it's important to realize that the Gulf Oil section talks about access to evidence. There'll be no access to evidence in Mexico. The evidence might be in Mexico, to the extent that makes any difference today with computers, but we're not going to access it. That's why they want to go.
Wait a second. You can subpoena in Mexico, can't you, under the Mexican procedure for evidence?
The judge can subpoena someone.
Okay, but you can
go to the judge
and ask for it.
The parties have no subpoena power. The judges, though, on the contrary, have very strong subpoena powers in support of foreign cases. So if we tried the case in Michigan, you could ask a Mexican judge to allow for a deposition in Mexico, and that's a policy. So basically, they'll support U.S. depositions, but they won't allow in their own proceedings. And all that's set out in the affidavits, and it's just true. The bottom line, Your Honor, is this court has said foreign nonconvenience dismissals should only occur if it's in the interests of justice.
Thank you, counsel.
Okay.
The case will be submitted.
All right.